She is a digital marketing specialist who can spin the meanest website around.
And he's host of the TV show Buzz, which features nonprofit organizations receiving marketing makeovers.
Here on Buzz for Good, we talk all things nonprofit, the people they serve and the good they do.
And we talk to creative professionals and provide marketing tips and tools to help your nonprofit achieve more.
That's right.
Buzz!
Well, greetings, everybody, and welcome to Buzz for Good, where we talk all things nonprofit, the great work that they do in the communities that they serve. And on today's show, we are spanning the nonprofit world and showcasing the incredible variety of these life-giving and community-building organizations. And to that end, I will be featuring a theatrical company that, alas, includes yours truly, as it prepares for an Advent production at a Roanoke church, proceeds from which will go to support another nonprofit that helps our homeless. Today, I'll also preview an event happening December the 8th that will star our region's newest technology and biotech entrepreneurs and the nonprofits that's been working since August to help them accelerate their startup companies. I will also provide some great tips and tools to help nonprofits and really anyone who cares about nonprofits maximize year-end contributions as we gear up for Giving Tuesday on November the 29th. And we will provide an audio sneak peek of our newest episode of Buzz that airs on November the 30th on Blue Ridge PBS, starring the nonprofit Friends of the Blue Ridge. My name is Michael Hemphill. I'm the creator and host of both this radio show and the TV show Buzz that airs on Blue Ridge PBS. And you can stay connected with me and all that we are doing to support nonprofits throughout the region through our website, buzzforgood.com. That's Buzz, B-U-Z-Z, number 4, good.com, as well as our social media handles on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, even TikTok, all at Buzz for Good. I want to thank our sponsors, Freedom First, where people bank for good, freedomfirst.com, as well as Partners in Financial Planning, a Southwest Virginia-based financial management firm, partnersinfinancialplanning.com, and the Roanoke Cultural Endowment, which is working to secure a long-term funding source for arts and cultural organizations throughout Roanoke, roanokeculturalendowment.org. Now, first up on today's show is the nonprofit Logos Theatricus, which is presenting the Advent production Like Winter Waiting the weekend of December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th at Our Lady of Nazareth Catholic Church. I happened to sing in the Our Lady of Nazareth Church choir, a role that I have been perfectly content doing, just being a member of the choir for this last year or so. Well, when they had auditions for this production a few months ago, I did not audition for it because, again, I am happy just being a little old choir member. Well, the church choir director, Dan Keeley, in his way, came up to me one Sunday after church and said, "Hey, look, we need one more king to be, you know, one of the three kings in this production." I figured, well, okay. You know, me joining a couple other middle-aged old guys to, you know, sing in this thing would be just fine. Well, I got the bait and switch, folks, because right before the first rehearsal, Dan comes back up to me and says, "Well, you know, we actually could find somebody else to be a king. What we really need is, wait for it, the Archangel Gabriel." Yes. He has roped me into being the Archangel Gabriel, which is not just me singing with a couple other guys one little song. It's actually me singing like two solos along with these really long monologues in the production. It's been fine. It's been fine. But let's just say the reason to come to Light Winter Waiting is not to witness the Archangel Gabriel, but all the incredible other fabulous musicians and performers in this production. It really is a lovely performance, production, Archangel notwithstanding. And so I would encourage you to please come on out to Our Lady of Nazareth on December 2nd. 3rd and 4th. There are four productions over that weekend, and be part of it. It's a free event, but there will be a collection taken up for the nonprofit, The Least of These Ministries, which provides a lot of great services for our homeless population in Roanoke. I actually featured The Least of These Ministries earlier this year on this show, and so I'm going to share again my conversation with you here.
My name is Dawn Sandoval, and I'm the founder of The Least of These Ministry, which is an organization that serves people that are battling homelessness.
How did the organization come about? What was your inspiration for it?
In 2011, we were living in Salem, Virginia, and I just felt called to do inner city ministry. There's really not an inner city in Salem. So my husband and I packed up from Salem and moved over to Gilmer Avenue, and I would walk to work every day. And I just began engaging with the homeless people that were on the streets and learning their stories. I would bring my dogs out, and they just loved having the opportunity to, you know, pet your animals and talk. And so I started recognizing these needs, and I just started basically begging my friends. I'm like, bring me your old coats, bring me your old gloves, your old hats. And so that's how it got started. And so that was 2011, and this is our 11th year of ministry, and my, how things have changed.
Right. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I didn't know about the organization until one of your, I guess, volunteers reached out and said, hey, you really need to check these folks out. Mm-hmm. So describe where we are right now, what the address and the facility.
Okay. So right now we're at our ministry building, which is located at 422 Luck Avenue in Southwest Roanoke. And this building is a supply pantry of sorts that offers showers, laundry, and lunch to people that are unsheltered. So 3 days a week, we open our doors and we provide lunch, and our people that are sleeping outside can come and shower, do laundry, get supplies like underwear, hygiene products, tents, blankets, things of that nature to make sure that they survive the different elements of the
weather. Right, I saw sleeping bags in there, mm-hmm. all sorts of supplies that you have available. It's amazing.
Yes. And then we have our ministry truck that is also housed here so that it can be stopped to go out on the streets 3 or 4 days a week and serve at the street level. And then we also have lockers that we've provided, which are on the outside of our building, right, so that unsheltered folks have somewhere to preserve their blankets, their personal papers like birth certificates, IDs. Those things are really hard for unsheltered folks to keep up with.
Yeah, right. And so, I mean, I think you described Least of These Ministry as a gap ministry.
Correct.
For the homeless. So talk about that, how it kind of fits in with Rescue Mission and Ram House, which I think more people are knowledgeable about.
Well, there are a lot of gaps in our homelessness services. And so what basically started the shower laundry portion of this building was when the pandemic began, we were being told to wash our hands 20 times a day. And then our unsheltered friends had nowhere to even use the bathroom, mm-hmm. to take a shower, to do any of that. And so as this pandemic has continued to plague us 2 years later, we realized that we needed to put something that was more permanent in place. So that was what started this model, was to provide showers and laundry for people. There's not another organization that is offering showers to people that are out on the streets and campsites and alleys and things of that nature. And so with that, during the pandemic, there was also a need for additional food because some of our day shelters were closed.
Right.
So we actually served on the streets 7 days a week from when the pandemic began until August of 2020. Seven days a week we were serving lunch at the street level because the day shelters were not functioning at that time.
Right.
And so now with this building, a lot of people forego places to grab lunch so that they can get in line for showers and laundry. So we provide them with lunch when they're here as well.
How wonderful. How do you get your funding for all of this?
we have been blessed to be supported by this community.
Really? That the community, it's just all donations.
It's all donations.
Wow.
We have received a few community grants. Mm-hmm. We've been blessed with that for sure.
Right.
But the majority of our funding comes from just people who believe in what we're doing and support us. And we're so grateful.
Yeah. So, I mean, the issues of homelessness are endless. I mean, there's the physical health, there's the mental health, there's the employment, there's the bills, there's people who are trying not to lose their homes, mm-hmm. you know, and become homeless. And so Ram House, I know, provides a lot of financial services that assist with that. Mm-hmm. Rescue Mission provides a place for them to sleep at night. And then here you come in with this, recognizing even more issues like hygiene and, you know, yes. food and all these sorts of things. So, I mean, it's incredible.
And we also operated a warming bus this winter. We were donated a 26-passenger bus.
Mm.
And when we were given the bus, I had no idea what God intended us to use it for. And we were like, but there's a lot of people that aren't able to go to the mission for one reason or another. So we'll just run it. You know, it'll idle all night. There was a volunteer that operated it, and we had 16 to 20 people utilizing it most nights that it was operating. Wow. Anytime the temperature was below 40 degrees.
Wow.
And one of the gaps that we were able to fill was there are people that suffer from homelessness that have service dogs, even if they consider them emotional support dogs, but they don't have the papers and all that.
Yeah.
We would let them bring their service animals onto the bus with them. And that's something that not many places allow for them to keep their animals with them.
Mm.
But it's so important to them because they have no control over their life. Everywhere they eat, everywhere they sleep, everywhere they bathe, it's all dictated by availability.
Mm-hmm.
And so to separate them from their animals, the one thing that they feel like they have some control over is it's very difficult on them. So they were beyond grateful that they could bring their dogs.
And I noticed on your mobile truck mm-hmm. that you also have dog food that mm-hmm. you take around, so that if you're giving, you know, blankets and underwear and other supplies, you're also providing their dogs with some food.
Yeah. And we'll give them T-shirts and things for their animals as well. You know, we're not able to save everybody, but it's a starfish story. We're doing what we can for the one that's in front of us.
Mm.
So
well put. You know, you talk about services you provide, but I also saw a lot of furniture mm-hmm. in your facility.
Yes.
What's that for?
So our ministry has created relationships with landlords, local landlords, mm. and so we have housed over 300 people in the last 4 years.
Wow.
We master lease the apartments. We stay engaged with the people that are put there. They're not compartmentalized like, okay, now you're in a place to live, we won't see you again. You know, mm-hmm. we go and make sure that everything is going well. We make certain that the rent is paid, and we just maintain a good relationship with those that we house and the landlords that we place them with. So that furniture is an opportunity to stage their apartments. We give them living room furniture, bedroom furniture, everything for your kitchen, you know, as it is available, you know, as long as we have that donated thing. So
you're obviously helping them while they are homeless, but also you're trying to provide home for them as well.
Correct. That's the culmination of everything we do, is to celebrate them moving into a place to live.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
And then one of the things that we also do is reunite people with their family members that are not in Roanoke. So we come across a lot of homeless individuals that are released from prison, that are given a bus ticket to Roanoke, that are made aware that they feel like Roanoke has homeless services, so they come here.
Right.
So when we identify these people that are not from Roanoke, but they have a support system somewhere else, we verify that they would be out of homelessness if we sent them wherever their family is or their friends, and we will buy them Greyhound bus tickets to reunite with their families.
Wonderful. And once again, it's the least of these.org or just
the least of these ministry.org.
Okay.
And then the Facebook is TH3, least of these.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for the work that you were doing to care for, well, the least of these in our community. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for taking your time to come and talk to us.
Absolutely. So that is the Least of These Ministries. One more time, if you are seeking a wonderful Advent experience in preparation for Christmas, again, Archangel Gabriel, notwithstanding, please go to oln-parish.com. That's O-L-N for Our Lady of Nazareth, oln-parish.com, and register for the free performance that you would like to attend Friday, December 2nd, 7:30, Saturday, December 3rd, 1 p.m. and 7:30 p.m., and Sunday, December 4th, 3 p.m. Again, it's free to attend, and a collection will be taken up to support the Least of These Ministries. Now, the following Thursday, December the 8th, is Demo Day for the 5 startup companies that are being coached and accelerated by RAMP. RAMP standing for the Regional Accelerator and Mentoring Program. All are invited to this free event as well, where you can meet and learn from our region's newest and brightest technology entrepreneurs. And with us today is my good friend and director of RAMP, Lisa Garcia. Well, it is my pleasure to welcome a good friend of mine here on Buzz for Good, Lisa Garcia, who is the Vice President of Entrepreneurship for Verge, the parent organization, the partner organization of both the Roanoke-Blacksburg Technology Council and RAMP, the Regional Accelerator and Mentoring Program, for which she also serves as director. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
So, little background, I say good friend of mine because I have known Lisa for 25 plus years now. I had just moved to Virginia with my wife in summer of 1997. I was looking for a job at the Roanoke Times and was informed that the Roanoke Times New River Valley Bureau was seeking someone to come in on an interim basis because there was this hotshot reporter there who was about to go on maternity leave. And so that hotshot reporter ended up being Lisa Garcia, who at the time was about to deliver her first child, Brooke. And lo and behold, that became a full-time stay-at-home job for Lisa, which allowed me to stay full-time at the Roanoke Times. And here we are 25 years later, still friends.
Absolutely. Still friends.
Still friends. With all these kids of ours now grown and almost gone.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you. It's good to see you. It's been a great journey, and it's been fun to have intersections over the years,
yep,
both professionally and personally.
Yep. A lot of play dates back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yep, yeah. Yep. And here you are now, the director of RAMP.
Yeah, yeah, I'm so excited to have and to see the through line of community work that we've both been able to act as servant leaders in this community in a variety of ways, and we've made this home special. And because we came here and it was special, and we get to keep enriching and making sure that it remains the special place that it is.
I wanted to invite you to the show because coming up on December the 8th is the culmination of one of the main programs of RAMP, which is the cohort, in which this fall cohort features 5 different startup companies, entrepreneurs, and the services that you have been providing them over the course of these 12 weeks. And on demo day is when they get to then present kind of their reimagined companies, their missions, visions for the community at large. Is that What happens on demo day?
Yeah, so demo day, that term in general for accelerators all around the world is a time when a startup company has gone through a business accelerator, and at the end of that formal program, they pitch their company, where it is at that point, to usually to investors, to people, to an audience that perhaps might be interested in investing in their company. We will have venture capitalists and angel investors in the audience. We always do for RAMP's demo days. This is the seventh cohort to go through RAMP in the 5 years of its existence. But I like to think of demo day here in our region as a demonstration of all of the activity and support in the region for entrepreneurship and startups in general. You get to see all the different kinds of people in the audience. And what I like to tell our entrepreneurs, especially the ones that are nervous about getting up and doing their pitch, that's, there's not one face in this crowd that doesn't want you to succeed. They're all here to see you succeed.
Right. Whether they're willing to invest their actual money into your company, they all have, they're all wanting to invest, I guess, their moral and psychological support, community support.
And talent and expertise. Yeah. Right. I mean, RAMP is the culmination, the aggregation, I should say, of subject matter expertise that spans from law, finance, venture capital, angel investing, industry subject matter experts from biotech, biomedical, Department of Energy. We have people who have done product development with NASA. It's just an incredible community of talent and expertise. And again, all these people are freely sharing their wisdom and their expertise with these startups that otherwise wouldn't be able to afford that. And I should say that RAMP is a program of Verge, which is a nonprofit, and all of this expertise is provided free of charge for the startup companies. That we have five seats in each cohort, and each one of those companies receives $20,000 of non-dilutive funding as part of their RAMP and residence programming.
And non-diluted, for those who don't know that term, basically means this: it's a grant that doesn't require the company to give up any of its control or equity to receive. Just helps them accelerate.
Yeah, it, in some respect, it allows them to spend the time that's required to be a part of the business accelerator. You know, this is the other thing about being in any accelerator: it's time consuming. Mm-hmm. You're expected to show up and participate in programming.
Well, let me interrupt there. So tell about these companies applied to be in this fall cohort back in the summer, and a committee was formed to interview them, analyze whether they were ready for an accelerator program, and then they were accepted into the program. And it's a 12-week, very intensive program. What all happens during those 12 weeks?
Sure. So they go through a three-day boot camp as part of the program. They have classes and training around what we call customer discovery and identifying markets once a week for 3 hours. They also, once a week in addition to that, have a lunch and learn opportunity with, again, some expert in the region that has contributed their time and talent to this effort. Legal firms, bankers, marketing, and human resource experts. We try to tailor some of the expertise being brought to the table to the age and stage that the companies are at, or what they've self-identified are critical areas for them. So they also are invited to invitation-only opportunities to meet some of the leaders in the region and at the state level. And so it takes a good bit of time, and we help them connect and network with people actually all across the nation and internationally if necessary, to make sure they have the best information they can to inform their next steps as a startup company.
Nice. Once again, here on Buzz for Good, I'm joined by Lisa Garcia, who is the Vice President for Entrepreneurship for Verge and the Director of RAMP, the Regional Accelerator and Mentoring Program that provides resources for startup companies and entrepreneurs in the technology and biotech space in the Roanoke and Blacksburg regions. This is your first cohort being the director of. You've been a mentor and instructor in the past, but you came to this position of director of RAMP in the summer. Congratulations.
And thank you.
What's been your biggest, I guess, surprise or something that you've, you know, being in this first cohort for you as the director?
So Mary Miller was the first through the wall, as we like to say. The first customers, the first dollars to raise for any kind of effort like this are the most difficult. So, kudos, props, and celebration for Mary Miller. She got us to where we are today. perhaps the thing that's been most surprising to me is there's just a lot of work behind the scenes that folks don't see that goes into an effort like this. And again, Mary's work and the team and the folks that came before me had already blazed a trail on all that. Aside from that, most surprising recently is that one of the additional grants that we received as an organization in the last year was through the Truist Foundation. And part of that was, it's an access to capital series. It's to provide some workshops and clinics and training for entrepreneurs in the region about where do you find money? How do you get money to support your effort? As part of that, we were able to have some funds to provide as micro grants to entrepreneurs who were applying for SBIR or STTR funding, which is, again, federal funds to support the development of research-based companies or technology companies. And that work of writing the grants is very intensive. So these grants were meant to help companies hire grant writers or work with somebody to help them. And they're not big grants. They're $2,000 or, I'm sorry, $2,500 or $4,000. And, you know, we looked at that and said, oh, that's such a small amount of money, right? Well, our startups are like, oh my gosh, this is so helpful. You have no idea, right? And I think what we all do perhaps sometimes is underestimate the power of a small inflection of talent or money or resources can make at a particular point in a startup's journey can make a huge difference in the journey of the company.
Yeah, not just the dollar amount, which may be small, but just being able to leverage that for bigger grants along the way. Hey, we received a Truist Foundation grant, one of these grants, which just gives, you know, a future funder more confidence in the organization or the company.
Yeah, so that grant was the brainchild and a lot of heart and soul, and still working on it right now is Greg Feldman in our region, who really wants to see the deliverables from that grant to be evergreen in some respect. And again, we're trying to upskill the region in all the ways we can so that folks have not just talent around them to support them in their startup journey, but actual monetary and fiscal resources to do that work as well.
For the companies coming through the cohort, I mean, these are all very smart people who have, you know, created something or some idea, have something that they want to then bring to market. But what is the biggest challenge for them to overcome in going through the cohort?
Yeah, well, they're trying to do, so many things at one time.
Yeah.
And we really require them to go out and do customer discovery. And what that means at a very high level is going out and having conversations with potential customers to find out what their challenges and problems are, not to sell. This is a big challenge for somebody that's trying to, at the same time, raise money for their startup. And we're saying, don't spend time with these potential customers trying to sell them anything. Go figure out what their problems are, what's their workflow like today, what solutions are they using today, so you can bring that data back, and we can help you organize and analyze it and find out, is there a product market fit? Right? Can you solve the problems that they need or are seeking solutions for? And so that's a challenge for folks. But as soon as we get them to click over into that, oh my goodness, the discoveries this cohort is uncovering and able to apply already for their startups has been really exciting to see.
Is there one particular cohort member this go around that you can point to as an illustration of that?
Well, you know, they've all done a really great job with it, and it's resonated with them in different ways. But I'll say that Dot Drives out of Lynchburg, Virginia, I think Dot Drives One is the first startup company that we've had from Lynchburg in the ramp process. So we're glad to have them. They have taken customer discovery and put it in as one of the steps of their process for their sales pipeline, which I think is fantastic. So before
What is Dot Drives?
Dot Drives is a startup out of Lynchburg that has created a software tool and platform for small nonprofits. They're hitting a space and a need where oftentimes small nonprofits will be the tools that are available for them far outpace what they need. And Michael, you can probably say this better than I can.
Well, specifically in donor engagement.
Yeah.
You get a contribution that comes in from a donor, and then, you know, yes, there's the recording of it, there's the acknowledgement of it, but then there's just the continued management relationship with the donor that you want to, you know, continue with, so that that donor will stay engaged and keep donating to the organization.
Yeah, so Dot Drives has, you know, their product is great for small nonprofits, and small being, you know, $1 million or less a year, which to some of us is like, wow, $1 million, that sounds like a lot. But a lot of those nonprofits are using a spreadsheet, like an Excel spreadsheet. That's their tool. Or they've tried to, you know, in my case, I worked for a nonprofit for years a long time ago, and I thought Salesforce would be a great tool, but it is so complicated for a small, and so much more than a small nonprofit needs. So they've really found a problem, and they're addressing that, and they have a sales process. They found a lot of great information, a lot of future, I'm sure, customers through customer discovery, and they've added customer discovery as a initial step of their sales pipeline. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, they're talking to people first and listening first, and then figuring out how do they approach them later for a sale.
Nice. So we will definitely, on a future episode of Buzz for Good, talk to the folks at Dot Drives.
Oh, I hope you do. They're a great team.
Yeah, because they are, from what, because they interviewed me for this customer discovery.
They did.
And from what I hear, you know, what they were saying, I mean, there's such a huge need for what they are providing, because you're right. It's like either you go the Excel spreadsheet route, or you spend the, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for a very complicated, you know, donor management system, which that nonprofit probably doesn't really need all those bells and whistles or expense.
Yeah, it's very much the case. I'm excited, and, you know, Dot Drives, as is the case with several companies that come to REP, was already spotted and supported financially by one of our strong partners, which is VIPC, which stands for the Virginia Innovation Partnership Corporation, one of our statewide partners. And so they had already identified and supported them. I did not share that internally with our selection committee. They were selected based on their own merits, so we're really glad that all of those things are aligning.
Yeah. What are the other companies in this cohort? Just to illustrate the breadth of the technology and biotech.
Sure. So we have Fermi Energy, which is a cathode, leading edge cathode design company, founded by a faculty member at Virginia Tech. So this is one of many companies we've worked with, which is a spin-out from Virginia Tech and intellectual property created here at our own hometown university, one of our hometown universities. We have Kinkashi Microbes out of Floyd County that's doing some advanced work around soil health and composting. They actually, at our last event, Meet the Cohort, had two chemical engineers in a large company that wanted to talk to them about the work they're doing. So we're excited. We're excited for them about that. We have Enabled Engineering, which is a leading edge technology around the development of material science, and I'm not going to go into the technical details on that because I would probably do it wrong, but there's all sorts of engineering around nuclear and the kind of materials used in that space. And suffice to say that the materials Enabled Engineering is creating last longer and are more resilient in that space. So they're backed by federal funds from the Department of Engineering, Department of Energy, and have received two SBIR grants at this point. So again, what's interesting is Kumar, who is the CEO of that company, when we asked him what he was interested about with RAMP, because he had a lot of financial support, he's like, I don't know anything about business. So, like you said, brilliant people, deep technologists, and RAMP and our community is able to put business skills wrap them around these very, very smart technologists. And then the last company we have is called Kintoros, and they, the founder, has invented a therapeutic to be used for chronic infections and inflammation in joints. Their first beachhead market is in the equine or horses. And so what's really fascinating about that, again, I'm not going to delve into the science, I'll get it wrong, but Jessica Gilberti, who invented this this therapeutic, says that the application of that with the horses, if you have a racehorse, for instance, that has been injured, oftentimes that horse is taken out of the space of racing, they're able to bring that same horse back to 100% proficiency. And the same is true with, they've tested this with dogs, with pigs, and on human tissue, and getting the same efficacy results. So wow. It may be someday that this company, in ramp today, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, there will be people with knee injuries that will be brought back to 100% in a time right now when we can't do that. We just physically can't do that.
Wow. That's, well, thank you. And you, everyone listening into this show, can see and meet and hear about all these companies at Demo Day on December the 8th, that is hosted by RAMP as well as the Roanoke-Blacksburg Technology Council, both who are under Verge, the nonprofit organization that kind of is the collaborating partner for both of those organizations. Anything else about Demo Day? Where is it? How do you sign up to be part of it?
Sure. So Verge, our region covers the Roanoke and New River Valleys, as well as Lynchburg. So we alternate the sites for all of our events between Roanoke and Blacksburg, most often, sometimes farther afield. So this one happens to be at Blacksburg at the Virginia Tech University Club. So again, you can register for that online. Just go to our website, RBTC. There's an events calendar page. You can click registration there. We've also created an event on RAMP's LinkedIn page. You can find it there as well. Or, you know, if you don't mind not having a name tag, you can show up at the door and we'll welcome you as well. But we'd love to have people there to see the amazing things going on in our region and to be part of the technology and biotechnology and startup entrepreneurial community.
Excellent. So once again, that is December the 8th at the Virginia Tech University Club. And for more information, go to rbtc.tech or rampRB.tech. Lisa Garcia, thanks so much again for coming on the Buzz for Good.
Thank you.
So one more time, more about RAMP and Demo Day on December the 8th by going to RAMP's website, rampRB.tech, rampRB.tech. Coming up soon for all nonprofits is the kickoff to the most important time of year, financially speaking, and that is Giving Tuesday on November the 29th. To help nonprofits with this critical season where they receive the vast majority of their charitable contributions that they will receive throughout the year, I'm going to replay my conversation that I had last year with marketing expert and occasional Buzz for Good co-host, Carrie Cousins, followed by my chat with Buzz friend Bill Gilmer, owner of print marketing firm WordSprint in Blacksburg. Now, let's talk year-end giving.
Well, the biggest day of the year for year-end giving is coming up. That's known as Giving Tuesday. And Giving Tuesday, if you look around online, is actually hashtag Giving Tuesday, all one word. It's a great day of social media giving where companies, nonprofits from around the world all get together to promote what they do, how they do it, and raise money.
Yep. So now this is, I mean, Giving Tuesday is kind of like one of the days in a series of days that we're all supposed to kind of have marked on a calendar, starting with Black Friday.
It actually starts with Thanksgiving.
Okay, good.
Let's start with the turkey, right?
Okay, Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, Black Friday,
right?
Cyber Monday, Giving Tuesday.
There's a small business Saturday in there,
there
as
is.
Well, right?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Oh, I missed one too.
That's all right. All good.
So you want to think about your funds and how you're going to distribute them during that holiday shopping window.
Right. Right. And so
I start with Giving Tuesday, right? If you're a nonprofit, now is the time to get your package together and get stuff out to your donor base to support Giving Tuesday. You know, I would really start with, if you do nothing else this year, use the hashtag. Start on social media. Let people know you're accepting donations and use that Giving Tuesday hashtag. Then create a simple ask. Don't just blanket ask for donations. Ask for donations with a purpose. What can people contribute to specifically for Giving Tuesday this year?
Right, because organizations typically, you know, like to say, hey, support our annual fund. But no one really likes to support the annual fund because you don't really have a direct connection of where that money is going to.
Exactly. But if you can tell me if I give $5, I can feed a shelter puppy, I'm in.
You're all in.
And it's $5.
You do love your puppies.
I do love my puppies. So create a really simple ask that resonates with people. You don't have to create a full campaign, just a simple ask for Giving Tuesday. Then schedule things to go throughout the day on Giving Tuesday. The way social media works, if you post one time at 8 a.m., that's not necessarily enough. Schedule a couple of emails and a couple of social media posts throughout the day on Giving Tuesday so people who are online at different times have a different opportunity to connect.
Okay.
Create a wish list for Giving Tuesday. Amazon actually will allow a nonprofit to create a wish list, share the link, and I can actually buy things from your wish list.
Really?
And donate them to you.
Wow. It's like actual items
that actually I can buy on Amazon and they are shipped to your nonprofit. So if your nonprofit is trying to gather hats and gloves in a homeless shelter, for example, this winter, get on that Amazon wish list, ask for sizes and whatnot that you need, and share the link with folks so they can actually donate goods to your organization. Sometimes that's more powerful than money.
Had no idea that they did that. How cool is that? Not just hats and gloves, but really any supplies that you, the nonprofit, might need. A new computer, a printer, or any of those items.
Any of those items. And all of it goes through that wish list program.
Love it. Okay.
Make sure you're acknowledging people who are giving on Giving Tuesday. If someone sends an email and says, hey, I'm going to donate $1,000, go thank them. Ask if you can thank them publicly. Ask them to share their gift online. Part of what makes Giving Tuesday work is this idea of social sharing. Mm-hmm. So the more people who are involved, the more people will know about your organization and cause.
Okay.
Make sure your website is set up and has the bandwidth to handle online donations. If you are sending people to your website on Giving Tuesday, it needs to be functioning. Check it twice, check it three times, make sure it's working. Make sure the link that you post is correct.
Right.
And share.
Love it, okay.
And then finally, ask for recurring gifts. If you can get a donor to give you $10 a month for 12 months, that's more money than one gift of $100.
Yes.
And it's really only 10 cups of coffee.
And it's probably more long-lasting because so often, here's a little tip, people forget about or just don't take the time to stop a recurring donation.
It's very true.
And so they'll just let it go on rather than just let one, even a $150 gift up front, probably in the long term, is of less value to a nonprofit than a $10 monthly gift because it will inevitably go beyond just a year.
And you don't have to re-budget as an individual for $10. Right. Almost anybody can give $10 and not have to take it away from something else. Whereas a bigger gift, you might have to think of what I'm not getting instead. So ask for the smaller recurring gifts and allow them to do that online.
Love it. Anything else for Giving Tuesday?
Set a challenge. Right. Peer fundraising challenges. Maybe Michael and I are fundraising for the same group, and whichever one of us can do the most jumping jacks has to donate a certain amount of money. So challenge your friends. These kind of challenges work exceptionally well. You remember the water bucket challenge from a few years ago?
Oh, yes. ALS.
Started with a fundraising campaign.
Yep. So no, that was ice bucket. Same thing?
The ice bucket.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
Cold water, either way.
Yes, right.
And then finally, use your team. Set a daily goal for Giving Tuesday, and at different points during the day, have milestones and publicly do something for those milestones or recognize them. Again, if we're raising money for Buzz on Giving Tuesday, maybe every time we hit a $1,000 mark, one of us has to dress up and dance around on social media, or we have to recite the alphabet backwards. Do fun challenges with your team throughout the day that'll encourage your audience to give. They will pay to make you look silly.
And I've done far sillier things than that. So, but that'll be another episode. Okay.
But those are my quick tips.
I love it. I love it. You know, for Giving Tuesday, really that's one day, but it's also kind of like the beginning of the philanthropy season, right?
Because it is. The end of the year is key giving time. It's when people are figuring out what they need to donate for tax purposes. It's a great opportunity for last minute corporate gifts and individual gifts. So there's no reason to slow down just because it's the last month of the year.
All right, so, you know, Giving Tuesday really kicking off that philanthropy season for so many nonprofits. And, you know, for really, it's probably too late to do anything by print right now for Giving Tuesday. But for the rest of the year, there is still time. And to talk about that, I want to share with you an interview I had earlier this week with Bill Gilmer, president and owner of WordSprint in Blacksburg, their print marketing firm, who has some really great ideas and strategies for how you as a nonprofit can still maximize the most of this year and year in giving through print marketing. All right, Bill Gilmer, owner and president of WordSprint. How are you doing today?
Well, let's just say it is the busiest morning of the busiest day, of the busiest week, of the busiest month in WordSprint's history.
Oh, my stars.
This is the week that we have just, you know, so many clients trying to get those year-end appeals in the mail before Thanksgiving. There's just a lot of people try to get them in the mail or two people by Thanksgiving.
Right.
Some others come back and do it in December where there's a little bit less competition in the mailbox. But it's definitely it's interesting to me that it's still a strong push to do appeal mailings by the end of the year, even though some of the tax laws have changed. It still seems to be, according to all the stats, the most philanthropic time of year around Thanksgiving.
Right.
It's because you're starting to feel festive and you don't have the credit card bills from Christmas yet.
Right. Yeah. It's all designed for us to feel thankful and festive, not only for in our family members, but also our community and wanting to, you know, be sources of good, you know, for all around us. So introduce WordSprint for those who may not know what your business is.
WordSprint is essentially a marketing company. We manage direct campaigns for for-profit, but actually about 60-65% of our clients are nonprofit. Mm. We help folks manage their donor relations. And we do this through, you know, messaging and branding. We do this through direct mail and email. We do this through a lot of database, targeted database acquisitions and database cleansing, that type of thing.
Right.
So mainly we help people with their donor relations is probably our sweet spot.
Excellent. And, you know, print mailing obviously being a big piece of what you guys do. You know, if a nonprofit is going to send out a printed piece over the course of a calendar year, now seems to be the time when it would do it. You know, may not do anything.
That's when it.
For the rest of the year, and we'll have another conversation about perhaps the need for nonprofits to be a little more regular throughout the year. But now is the time, if a nonprofit hasn't started doing something yet for an end of year mailing, is it too late? And if not, what can they do still?
It's getting close to too late, but it's not too late yet. They would need to move quickly. At this point, it would probably not be possible to put something together that would mail before Thanksgiving. I mean, maybe, but you can certainly mail the first week or two of December and still have excellent results. We have some clients that actually wait until like December the 18th, 19th, 20th on purpose to be kind of that last little reminder before the end of the year.
Well, so for the nonprofit that's wanting to still try to do an end of year mailing, what are some of the key elements of a mailing that you find to be most successful?
Keep it simple.
Okay.
You know, our data shows that if you're going to ask for money, ask for money. You know, that there are other touches you make with your constituents where you let them know what you're doing, where you show them your impact, where you do all that. When you write a letter to Dr. Smith, you need to say, "Dear Dr. Smith, here's the great stuff we do. Please continue to support us." It needs to be pretty direct. Don't beat around the bush.
Right.
I've seen some that would be like, hey, would you please consider making a gift a year in? It's right. Like, no. Just say, basically, please make a gift now.
Yeah, we need your help. Please make a gift. Keeping it simple is big. We always like to say that the success of donor relations is getting the right message to the right people with the right rhythm. So the message has to be clear and succinct. Getting it to the right people, you know, it's a matter of having the right database and, you know, making sure it's cleansed. We help folks with this. The addresses are updated. Do you really have all of your key supporters on there? And then the rhythm part, of course, is that when you make the commitment to do a campaign like this, stick with it over several years. You don't really start seeing the snowball effect of good donor support if you've never done it before until you hit about the third cycle. It just takes a while to build trust.
Yeah.
And when you do these rhythmic touches, it does build trust, but rhythm doesn't become rhythm until there've been two or three cycles at least.
You know, you're saying a simple message, obviously a remittance mm-hmm. card or envelope inside the mailing.
Yes. Yes.
What else?
Yes. And, a few other things. We keep records on this, and there are national organizations that do this too, that track statistics. Just some little tidbits. The more personal, the better. If the personalization is accurate, you know, it's better to say dear Michael than dear supporter. Mm-hmm. If Michael is indeed your first name, you have to be accurate on the personalization. A slightly larger envelope gets a higher open rate than a number 10 envelope does.
Hmm. Okay.
So it's like a six by nine will, mail at the same rate and it gets a higher open rate. Those are kind of just some of the tricks of the trade, but it comes down to the basics are the right message to the right people with an established rhythm. Don't use direct mail by itself. Just like don't use email by itself. Don't use social media by itself. You really need to have a coordinated messaging out there where there are email messages that have the same look, feel as a direct mail piece, as the social media post. Again, that consistency builds trust and it makes it a lot easier for a donor to, give you money if they are seeing the same message on a few different platforms. Now, you don't have to go crazy on this. We're thinking two or three, a direct mail piece, an email follow-up, and some social media. We call it multi-channel marketing, but yeah. It should be tightly coordinated. And this, talk about what works, that is what works the most, is mm-hmm. the fact that it's multi-channel. Mm-hmm. We've done studies, in fact, there are national studies too that show this, that when you do mail followed by email and tightly automatically triggered to that mail and the email follows and it says, hey, Michael, did you get our letter yesterday? The one about the great job we're doing, yada, yada. If you haven't seen it yet, or if you've thrown it away, you bum, don't worry. It's not too late. Just click here. Uh-huh. That type of coordinated mail email has the best results.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Bill, I hope you survive the most difficult day of the most difficult week of the most difficult month, the most difficult year. Thanks for all the work and support that WordSprint provides nonprofits in our region. And I wish you a happy holiday season.
All right. Good luck to all the nonprofits starting Giving Tuesday through the end of the year, seeking the donations they need to continue fulfilling their vital missions throughout Southwest Virginia. Lastly, all are invited to our next Buzz Watch Party on Wednesday, November the 30th at Parkway Brewery in Salem, where we'll gather for the Blue Ridge PBS airing of our newest Buzz episode featuring the nonprofit Friends of the Blue Ridge. To give you a sneak peek of this episode, here are a few audio clips of our show. I have been fortunate to see some beautiful parts of our country and world, but none more so than these Blue Ridge Mountains we call home. In 1988, a nonprofit was founded to help preserve the natural beauty of this region and the iconic road that runs through it, the famed Blue Ridge Parkway. But in 2021, this nonprofit was forced to pivot when the National Park Service discontinued its relationship with the organization
and no longer allowed its hundreds of volunteers and members to work on the parkway. How that organization has redefined itself since then, while also preparing for its first ever fundraising event, is the story of today's episode of Buzz.
I'm Julie Whalen, Executive Director of Friends of the Blue Ridge. Friends was organized in 1988 as an official park partner with the National Park Service to support the Blue Ridge Parkway. Our volunteers and members helped support park staff in maintaining the parkway up until the end of 2019 when our park agreement expired. So starting in 2020, we reshifted our focus and kept our skill set for what we were doing on the parkway and shifted it to Blue Ridge communities where our volunteers live, work, and play. Until you come here, you don't realize what a unique experience the Blue Ridge region is. So I joined staff just shy of 5 years ago, so it was December of 2017. Between that starting point and where we are today, and we've seen a pandemic, we've seen the expiration of our park agreement, we've seen a lot. And it has been one of the greatest joys of my life is to have worked with these volunteers while we really found our way through it all and really landed on solid ground. Some of the Friends volunteers are the most, they're just beautiful people. And to be able to connect with them and support them and help them do what they want to do in their Blue Ridge communities is, it makes it fun to come to work. We now have 8 chapters in Blue Ridge communities with over 700 volunteers and 1,500 members. So for almost a decade, we have had a Virginia specialty license plate that has become one of our major revenue streams. What that allows us to do is support our programs and operations here in Virginia. So prior to our shift in focus, that money would support the parkway and would primarily fund the restoration team, a specialized arborist team that would come in to clear vistas and overlooks. Moving forward, starting in 2020, we reinvested that money into Blue Ridge communities, looking for opportunities to build playgrounds, develop trails, host concerts, an assortment of all kinds of things. In 2020, we were in the midst of a COVID lockdown and we were looking for a way to engage volunteers and members virtually. In doing so, we partnered with the Junior Appalachian Musicians and produced an hour-long PBS special to showcase upcoming young musicians who are really inspired by the musical tradition of the Blue Ridge region and hope to carry it on. One of the Friends pillars is youth outdoors. So we're looking for ways to engage, whether it's youth hikes, student groups visiting the greater Blue Ridge region from outside of this area. So we host groups from Boston University, University of Notre Dame, NC State, University of North Carolina. So they come either for a long weekend or a full week, and they're looking for ways to do community service, but also learn about the unique cultural heritage of this region. We haven't done a major fundraising event since the fall of 2019. So this year will be our first ever Blue Ridge Jamboree, where we are hosting a music concert, a large one, that will benefit our organization so we can keep doing more of what our chapters are doing in their local communities. Planning a fundraising event of this magnitude is beyond what we're capable of doing internally. Partnering with Buzz for Good is going to help us pull off an event that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise.
Again, please join us Wednesday, November the 30th at Parkway Brewery for our watch party, where we'll be seeing for the first time on Blue Ridge PBS our newest Buzz starring Friends of the Blue Ridge. It is free. Just go to buzzforgood.com under events and register if you would please. That's going to do it for today's show. Please continue to stay connected with us throughout the week through our website, buzzforgood.com, as well as our social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok, all at buzzforgood. Until we see you again next time, continue being a buzz for good in our communities. Bye now.